This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, I'm Sharad Kutan. With me, Tan Chung Han.
Good morning.
Good morning, and the morning run begins. We're taking you all the way to 10 o'clock this morning. It's the 1st of November, the 11th month of the year, the penultimate month of the year. We're looking actually at a very short horizon. We're coming up to the end of the year, and then it's 2018. Are you excited?
Oh, certainly. And also for those of you keeping score at home or in the car right now, it is less than 8 weeks till Christmas.
Okay, so you can join this conversation at any point in time by tweeting us at BFM Radio or WhatsApping us at 018-789-8899. You can engage with us on anything that we're talking about. We'll try to include you in the conversation. We begin with some stats for you early in the morning. I know numbers maybe not the best thing in the morning, but the national fertility rate of 2016 was the lowest rate ever recorded since the formation of Malaysia. The Vital Statistics Malaysia 2017 report said that the fertility rate per woman aged 15 to 49 in 2016 was 1.9 babies, a decrease from 2.0 or rather 2 babies in 2015.
Right, so the Department of Statistics here in Malaysia released a slew of stats on the Malaysian population. Now, while there was a decline in the birth rate in Malaysia, the number of deaths last year saw a jump, an increase of over 4%, 4.1%. So fewer babies, fewer Malaysian babies coming into the world and more Malaysians departing into the afterlife. So,
I want to know, Han, are you doing your bit, your national service to increase the fertility rate?
That is a subject that we will not go into on live radio. Thank you very much.
Okay, but I do think that there are two ways to resolve this problem, right? Okay, one, you can, slow down the rate of death, but maybe that's not such a great idea. Renewal is always good. Unnecessary death. But then there's the other question of giving incentives to people to have more children. And that's one game you can play. The other, of course, is importing talent, a game that's played in many countries, big and small. Singapore does it. The US does it. If you remember, I think every year they have a lottery. It's got to, you know, get people excited about becoming an American citizen. You know, do you think we should do that? We should have a lottery and get as many people around the world, especially those talented individuals, to become citizens?
Well, let's not ring the alarm bells yet, right? Because we still have a sizable population. In fact, the overall population of Malaysia has grown to 31.7 million people.
But that's not enough of a market, right? When you think of, you think of a good-sized national market that'll help, with drive sentiment and innovation and, you know. In fact, we have to import literally millions of people as workers, but we don't make them a permanent part of the Malaysian fabric. We don't give them a place under the Malaysian sun and get them to give the best to this country.
Well, then, Sharad, such a proposal would just open up a whole can of worms, right? A whole case of worms. So the national identity and
Speaking of worms, two preachers that were barred from giving religious talks in Singapore will be allowed to continue to work in Malaysia. One, of course, is from Zimbabwe. The other is a Malaysian. The Deputy Prime Minister, also Home Minister, said that he found the government has found nothing wrong with their previous talks. Whilst he also said that the government is constantly monitoring the activity of controversial preacher from India, Zakir Naik, to see if he is involved in terrorist activities.
Well, we have seen some domestic, local religious leaders who have been controversial themselves. So I think there's enough controversy being generated within our ranks.
Do we want to import more? That's the thing. Also, over 400,000 Malaysians will be sitting for SPM, or Sijil Pelajar Malaysia. The written examinations run from the 6th of November to the 4th of December. Good luck, parents. Keep us, updated on your anxieties. Remember, you can tweet us at BFM Radio and you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, that was Tusk by Fleetwood Mac. I'm sure it could be with me, Tan Chung Han, and the morning run continues. Despite some technical difficulties, you might have experienced a low volume on the songs that we've been playing, as well as some other, you know, disruptions. But we're trying to put that right even as we speak, and we're rebooting the system, and our technical geniuses are hard at work on the case.
Certainly, and Fleetwood Mac, though, what was the name of the song again?
Tusk.
Tusk. Tusk. Like elephant tusks?
Yeah.
I'm not too familiar with the repertoire
of Fleetwood Mac.
I mean, I know of Fleetwood Mac, but yeah, that's pretty much it, though.
Well, I think they did have, you know, if you remember the early 80s, there were quite a number of American bands that were inspired by, you know, African sounds. I mean, you know, kind of directly from the continent of Africa, rather through their own African-American traditions. And I believe Fleetwood Mac was one of those groups. But I'm no, you know, musical historian, and as you know, as I think it's, I demonstrate every morning. But
it's okay. Now, speaking about inspiration, though, let's talk about this event at the Miss Universe 2017 competition in Vegas next month. So, apparently, the Malaysian representative Samantha Katie James, she caused quite the stir on social media. Eh?
Yeah, she's causing a stir. Not because she's already taken to the catwalk, because the competition only happens
next month.
Later this month, I believe.
Oh, right, yeah.
It's November, the 26th of November. Yeah, we moved already.
Oh, yeah, that's
right. It's the 60th Miss Universe Beauty Competition. It's going to be held in Las Vegas in the United States. Yeah, but the what is controversial is the unveiling of the dress that she's going to be wearing. It's going to be Nasi Lemak themed. Right? Mm. This is not a scratch and sniff dress. This is not edible. This is just a dress that uses kind of like nasi lemak motifs.
Right.
So you have ikan bilis, you have sambal, you have a slice of a boiled egg kind of represented on the bodice of the dress.
Well, and it is quite literal, isn't it? Because you've got two slices of cucumber there as well, and it's not like a ikan bilis motif. It appears to be actual replicas of, you know, giant-sized ikan bilis literally attached to the dress. Now, on the back of a dress, she has these two banana leaves, which kind of come out like wings of sorts. So, apparently, I guess gauging by the reaction on social media, it has both shocked in a negative way. Some might even say they were repulsed, but also it has fascinated many others as well. Now, I must say this, I'm quite unsure what to make of it, though.
I don't know enough about the structure of beauty competitions. But I know there's one part of a beauty competition that usually has the contestants in dresses that are sort of over the top. You know, they look like they're all going for the carnival down in Rio. You know, and so, the wings. In fact, when I first looked at the picture, Han, I didn't recognize the banana leaf wings as wings. I thought it was just part of the backdrop. It was like she was standing against a wall with this. But it turns... And so you have that. So it's not about, you know, it's not the Miss Congeniality bit of the competition. It's more like how exotic and over the top and eye-catching can your costume be?
Yeah, so again, this is for the national costume segment of the competition. They have the evening gown one. I don't really follow these beauty pageants. I don't know if they still have the swimsuit part as well. You know, so this one is specifically for the national costume segment.
Well, okay. Malaysians, I think we can sometimes be accused have been quite literal, and you mentioned this earlier. So I would have thought that this nasi lemak ensemble would have been perhaps more complete if the other ethnic elements were also infused in the dress. So, for instance, on those big banana leaves, they should have been like a thali, like an Indian food put onto those banana leaves. After all, banana leaf rice is a big, you know, thing, at least in the Klang Valley. So you could have done that. You could have added some chinoiserie type thingies. She, after all, this young lady, Samantha Katie James, you couldn't guess from her name, but she's of Chinese-Brazilian descent.
Wow.
Chinese-Brazilian. Isn't that fascinating?
Talk about globalization, you know, right at our doorstep.
Malaysia is. I mean, are we not one of the most globalized countries of the world? considering, you know, the Straits of Malacca has been like a major thoroughfare for over a millennia.
Right. Now, despite our globalized roots, you know, yet I guess the question here is this, you know, whether or not we can whittle down the Malaysian identity, however you define it, right, into this one nasi lemak dress. Is this the quintessential element? Is this the
perfect representation
of what Malaysians
I need to put it this way. Every year they're going to have some knockout dress that is going to have wings and it's going to have to take flight on some stage somewhere in the world, right? Mm. So this year it's nasi lemak. Now, if we just did nasi lemak every year, it'd be pretty sad and pathetic. But seeing how this is unlikely, I don't know actually what was the dress last year. Maybe we want to do some good research on this.
Well, in recent years, they had a dress with like the Twin Towers kind of coming off the shoulders of the dress.
I remember that. Yeah, and that actually made it to an exhibition at Ilham Gallery downtown. If you want an art gallery, and it's got an amazing exhibition now of works from the modernist period of Malaysian art history in the 50s. But having said that, yes, the Twin Towers, and that's kind of iconic. And again, you know, it's flashy. It's probably the most tasteful thing. It's not something you want to turn up at a dinner party with, but it certainly will make an impression on the catwalk.
So once again, I think the question here is this, whether or not we can, some might say dilute, you know, some might say filter the Malaysian identity into these physical manifestations, be it the Twin Towers or nasi lemak or, you know, roti
canai. Or even, and as we're going to be talking about very soon, the question of crime, Malaysian criminality. Is that really what marks
put
us
put that
off?
On a dress.
I think you could. Stripes.
Jail
stripes, yeah.
Was a dress a crime then?
No. Sartorial crime. Okay, we'll be back with more. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, The Primitives with Crash. I'm Sharad Kutin, and with me, Tan Chung Han. Because our system did crash earlier on, and you might have experienced some disruption or low volume on your on the sound coming out, especially the musical segments that we've had this morning. But we're on our way to getting everything corrected. Now, what can't be corrected is the mindsets of some Malaysians who insist on behaving badly. Now, one of the latest cases of bad behavior comes from a man with the title Dato' Sri. He might be one of the youngest Dato' Sris in the country. He's in his late 20s. And because he gave himself up to the police over the weekend, he wore a shirt with the emblem of the company that he represents. And that sort of led to a lot of speculation about who he was. We now know him as Nicky Liao. Mm. And he's not only got the Dato' Sri, he's also got a doctor against his name. And I suspect that's not from being a medical professional, though we don't really know at this point in time.
Well, now, Sharad, you began with saying that such a mindset cannot be corrected. I hope that that is not the case. I would like to think and I would like to believe that there is this slimmer of hope when it comes to, you know, correcting this kind of behavior. Well, we do know that, like you mentioned, the Deputy Prime Minister has instructed the police and also the MACC to investigate him. I believe he surrendered to the authorities earlier this week. You know, so again, if you haven't been following this story, it was for beating up three RELA members and then subsequently attempting to bribe them.
Yeah, and you know, the 29-year-old Dato' Sri has, you know, I think displayed some of the kind of traits that we see in a particular class of Malaysians who are rich and entitled, right? Mm. They feel that they should be allowed to go anywhere at any time that they please, that they don't have to follow the laws set for us other mortals in the country, or fellow citizens, if you like to call them that. And therefore, this bullying is a natural consequence, and the violence, the natural consequence of this this attitude of entitlement.
Right. Do you think this story is exaggerated by the fact that this 29-year-old has that Dato' Sri title? Because violence, you know, physical assault, I mean, that permeates, well, I would say permeates, but you can find elements of that in various segments of society, right? It's not just confined to the rich and entitled, right? So
it's true, but when you look at the kind of relationship that somebody like that, and you're right, maybe it is a certain expectation that we have. Oh, you come with the Dato' Sri, you were given that title because of some sort of achievement. We don't even know, actually, at this point in time, why people get such titles, what the criteria might even be for such titles. But if you have a view on that, you can always tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Tell us what you think should go into the mix when giving somebody the title of Dato' Sri. We're coming up to the news shortly, and then we'll be back with more news and analysis. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was Candyman by the late Roy Orbison. I'm Sharad Kutin with me, Tan Chung Han, taking you all the way up to 10 o'clock this morning. It is only 6:38 in the morning right now, and it's first
only
of, only six. So we just started our long ride to the peak.
But you got to enjoy the ride, my friend.
You do have to enjoy the ride, except if you're confronted by fellow drivers with a nasty disposition. And remember that woman who threatened to attack an MPSJ officer with a steering lock, a steering lock, and who kept shouting. If you watched the wonderful video that went viral, which is Salaka. Salaka said at least 1,000 times.
At least.
I'm exaggerating a tad. So if you remember her, rather colorful young woman who wore black and fuchsia, I think. Well, looking at the picture now, remember the steering lock in her hand, which she wielded in a threatening manner. And what's really interesting, if you look at the image now, Han, is the fact that of the kind of the way in which the MPSJ officer comported himself. He was so calm. He had his hands behind his back, in a way, kind of very open to her. He didn't threaten her. He just sort of took it all.
That's right. And I believe the MPSJ officer got some kind of recognition from the various authorities.
Yeah, there must be an award, to be able to withstand very irritable, and threatening individuals on the beat.
But what he said was astonishing. Apparently this is like the norm, because he has faced such encounters several times before. Hence, he was able to maintain his composure, like it's part of the job.
And it's kind of like, I think, part of the same class of crimes that are committed, like the one by the Dato' Sri, right? Big people with, some sort of heft, in this case, I'm not quite sure what heft this young lady had, but it's picking on the small person, right? You take out your frustrations on people who have less social power than you. Chances are they earn much, much less than you. So the realer guys, this is a blokes who, pick up an extra bit of money or a few ringgit for a weekend work. And this, Dato' Sri with the Bentley. Remember, he turned up at the police station in his Bentley, taking it out on people who, not in the same social position as that. This kind of bullying, I think, is so typical. And it sort of demands sort of comment. What's happened, of course, in an extension to the story, is that she's now facing some jail time.
That's right. So just to give you an update here, 43-year-old Liu Yokping has now been found guilty of contempt of court by shouting and ignoring the court magistrate Nurul Huda Zakaria's order to keep quiet. Then, according to some media reports as well, she actually bit one of the officers over there as well, bite with the teeth.
Okay, so yeah, well,
but, as opposed to biting without the teeth. I don't know.
Now, hold on. So this really, again, does she have an anger management problem, or am I going out on a limb here? She's not only she's now in court and she's shouting at the magistrate and she's harming somebody bodily, because, you know, biting somebody is, it's painful. I mean, right. Human teeth, you know, I mean, we may be substantial. I mean, we're not saber-toothed tigers, but still, you know.
Right. Well, for you football fans out there, this brings to mind the likes of Luis Suarez, who has
Well, don't say bad things about Luis Suarez, okay?
Why? No, but he has been caught multiple times biting people.
All boxing fans who remember,
Mike Tyson.
Mike Tyson,
yeah,
okay.
Right. Infamous. But yeah. Okay, look, so obviously we can come to this conclusion that this is not normal behavior, not something that we can condone. But on a more serious note, though, is this a signal of perhaps some more serious underlying problems, or perhaps some mental instability? You know, I don't know, but you know, certainly it's something that is just shocking and just outright appalling.
Yeah, right? I mean, I think it's really for the experts to decide, right. In the courts, perhaps, you know, in the wisdom of the magistrate to direct this young woman to for some sort of psychiatric assessment and evaluation, and therefore, you know, and deal with from that level, or in this case, maybe to get her to calm down, to send her to a penal institution. I mean, basically, send her to jail.
Well, so that's the thing. So she will be spending a couple of weeks at the Kajang prison for this latest episode. Yeah, 2 weeks. That's according to media reports here. 2 weeks at the Kajang prison.
So I can hear the whole prison now chanting Salaka.
Oh my God.
I can just see it resounding out from Kajang all the way down to the Klang Valley.
Well, you know what the stereotype is. It's never anyone's fault in prison. Or at least that's what the movies tell me.
But it's never anybody's fault?
Yeah, it's never your fault.
Oh, really? Is that the way...
This is not first-hand experience, thank you very much. But unlike you...
I've never been in a prison. I was in a lockup. It's very different.
Same thing.
I've won an award from the courts for wrongful arrest and detention. So thank you very much, Paid for my refurbishments, household refurbishments. Thank the Malaysian taxpayer. But we'll be back with more news and analysis after this. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Jimmy Soul Clark and Sweet Darling. I'm Sharad Kutin. And with me, my sweet darling, Tan Chung Han. You saw that coming, didn't you?
Oh, my God. You're so disturbing.
And
it's out there already, you know, like you can't take it back.
To express love and affection for a colleague, you know, who you spend, 4 hours in the morning on air in a small, confined space with, I think is acting very,
Sharad, I'm
good manners. I call it good manners and, a little bit more.
I'm trying to find my safe space now.
Oh, dear, you're so insecure. Maybe it's because you come from, a tough part of town. Klang. Okay. Malaysia's football body has been fined $30,000 because the national team fans chanted dogs, or anjing, I guess would be the Malay equivalent, at supporters from Singapore and Brunei during the SEA Games matches. Malaysia's supporters chanted, "Brunei dogs should just be killed." I'm not even going to try a translation of that. During their side's 2-1 victory over the neighbouring country, the fine was instituted by the Asian Football Confederation.
Now, I think this warrants a discussion about the broader football culture. Now, I want to be very, very clear, not justifying
these
chants.
It's a game of four gentlemen played by hooligans. Is that the stereotype?
Let me add one more very important word there. Football fan culture. Because if you, for example, there are many chants by Premier League sides that talk about, say, burning people at the stake, even pedophilia, the works. Okay, so these are very, very vulgar chants out there. So, but again, not justifying what these guys are doing, right? Now, I was actually at the Singapore match where those chants occurred, and I was on the far side of the field, literally.
With the Singapore fans?
Close to them.
Oh, yeah. Divided loyalties, Mr. Tan Chung Han.
Because that was the only seat available.
I can take back
thank
that loving
much.
Statement I made. I don't know if I could love somebody who's not as patriotic as I am.
You're reading way too much into this. Anyways.
Okay, tell us. Finish your story.
Now, so the atmosphere overall was a rather jovial one. It was positive, it was great. Things were fine. You could hear the drums beating. You could hear the chants, but you just heard the melody. You didn't know exactly what they were singing. winning, right? So I think just to set the broader context, that match wasn't something that was marred in this chant alone. It shouldn't be defined by that chant alone. Like the fact that we ran out 2-1 winners, you know, I think that's a great achievement. It was, broadly speaking, a positive experience.
Okay.
But again, now
okay, so
with that said,
okay,
yeah.
Having said that, and yeah. I mean, that's your personal experience at the moment. Clearly, this accusation wasn't disputed by the Malaysian Football Association. As far as I can tell from the reports, they accepted it and they're going to be paying the fine. Now, one, will it change the attitude of football fans? I mean, football clubs and associations might take responsibility, and the responsibility, rightly so, has been sort of directed to these associations. And it's really up to the associations to make the point to their fans. Now, you support the team. Don't do anything that's going to diminish the team, you know, it's going to damage its reputation or even its financial standing.
Yeah. No, the reason I you know, gave those clarifications earlier on was to, you know, make sure that for those who are listening right now and perhaps don't have that point of reference, you know, it was not the single most defining element of the entire match and the entire experience. I, you know, I would be remiss if I didn't make sure that we have this broader context.
But if you were Bruneian and you were, you know, playing in, and wouldn't you feel annoyed? I mean, would it upset you? I don't know. Football players, thick skin, thin skin. Are they used to this? Is it something that just washes off, like, you know, water off a duck's back?
Oh yeah. Again, because of the prevalence of these kind of chants.
I'm looking at you because I know you've given your athletic build. Suggest that you are out on the pitch often, you know, at the receiving end of these kinds of comments.
Well, thank you. I was a state-level athlete, thank you very much, back in the day, way back in the day, okay? And there's a lot of trash talking that happens in sports. Not to this extent, okay? Obviously, there are varying extents. Like I said,
so
in the
should
UK,
we lighten up?
Right. Well...
I mean, should we just say, okay, look, let's just embrace it. It's about the passions of the moment. After all, people are not punching each other. Yeah, it's a bit of verbal abuse, but hey, what the heck? Let's just all take a chill pill and accept this and, you know, with good humor, because after all, at the end of the day, nobody disputes the results and we all go home, you know, and crack open a can of Coca-Cola.
Coca-Cola. No, look, I think a line has to be drawn somewhere, right? So obviously, as in the eyes of the Asian Football Confederation, this was an offense that warranted a fine, and rightfully so, and I agree to it. But, you know, if let's say you were to put this into the UK context, you can't be fining the fans of all, you know, 20 Premier League clubs and all the other clubs, you know, non-league clubs on a weekly basis, right? You can't. So, again, it's understanding that, you know, here, or sending out that strong message that at least when it comes to the Malaysian football body, there is no tolerance for these kind of chances. And I agree with it.
Yeah, I want to quote an ancient Asian philosopher who once said, Salaka. Salaka. And if you have an answer to that conundrum posed so many years ago, or maybe weeks in this case, you can tweet us at BFM Radio or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Join the conversation. We're going to take you all the way up to 7 o'clock in the morning with the second bulletin of the day with When Did Your Heart Go Missing by Rooney, not the footballer of the hair plugs fame. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. I'm Sharad Kutun. With me, Tan Chung Han. And the morning run continues. Just 22 seconds after 6 minutes after 7 on the 1st of November.
How precise.
That's me to a T. Now, yesterday it was reported, Han, that Malaysians intending to directly employ maids can start their search now, because this is from 9 specified countries, and it was announced during the budget debate in Parliament. But according to the president of the National Association of Private Employees Agency, this will be impossible without going through an agency. And the whole point, of course, was to bypass agents in this. He says that such a move will increase the possibility of human trafficking. Now, we spoke to Angel Fernandez. She is the director of the human rights organization Tenaga Nita, and asked her what she thought of this proposal.
For us at Tenaga Nita, this is what we have been proposing for many years. And we have done this because we have been receiving cases after cases of abuse of domestic workers by both the employers and the recruitment agencies concerned. And we have also had a lot of employers who have lamented on the high cost of payment at agencies for hiring a domestic worker. And what happens is the domestic workers' wages are then deducted for almost from 3, 6, and now even 9 months. And this is for payment to the agencies. Now, for us, this is ridiculous, absurd, and for me, this is human trafficking.
We asked her what framework would ensure that this initiative works.
What we have been proposed, actually, to the government is that one is to have a clear policy, a transparent policy on the hiring of domestic workers. And in order to reduce the cost so they do not become bonded, and that is what we are saying, that lower costs would help. And together with this, you put in place a speedy recruitment process. And this process, we need to be aware that there is no cronyism, there is no corruption. And that is important. And we believe that if you have a good monitoring system put in place and you have continuous dialogue with employers, with civil society organizations and the government departments, it can work.
We also asked her about the suggestion that instead of making things better, this is going to increase the possibility of human trafficking.
Now, even now with the recruitment process of agents, we see so much of human trafficking. This week alone, we received 5 cases from the public for rescue and for the abuse of domestic workers. What does this tell you? That it is there. So now we need to reduce it. And I think with what, as I've stated earlier, with good policy and practice, I think we can reduce the state of human trafficking.
So we asked her finally, you know, how can we empower foreign workers in this whole process?
Exactly. And we have proposed already to the government that even looking within ASEAN states, that we are saying that they are all domestic workers coming from different countries, that we should have one contract that covers everyone. There should not be a difference in wages, in the way they are treated, you know, for which country they come. There should be no discrimination, and there should be just one contract because they are all doing the same job. And therefore, I think with this contract, then you not only empower the domestic worker, because he's a worker like any other worker, you also then have the availability of taking to task the perpetrators, that would be the employees. And we should see that this is not a private home anymore. The moment that you employ somebody to work in your home, it now becomes transparent and open for people to scrutinize you.
That was Angel Fernandez, a director of the human rights organization Tenaganita. Coming back to an issue that affects a lot of, you know, middle class Malaysians, the question of, you know, how is can they cope? You know, often two salaried families, they need somebody at home to help out, and all the problems that come out of that.
Right. Now, this reliance on maids, you know, this has been generational, right? To be frank, I was raised by my maids, you know, at the time, you know.
They from a foreign country?
So the first one was local and she stayed with us for a few years. But then after that, it was just mostly Indonesians. I think we had one Filipino maid. So essentially, you know, my entire childhood, all the way up to my teens, you know, we had maids and I was raised by them because of the demands placed on both my mom and dad having to work and financially support 9 kids, right? And that's a story for another day, like 9 kids.
I mean, it is also kind of a marker of what's changed in terms of employment opportunities. Mm. I too grew up with somebody who helped out at home. She wasn't live-in, she was local, and maybe my generation, distinct from yours, didn't have that whole foreign maid, but I saw that approach. Now, the question is, how do we knowing that there is abuse, how do we solve the problem? And, you know, how do we create a system that's transparent? Because abuse doesn't benefit anybody in the long term. Kids who are exposed to their parents abusing domestic helpers also grow up, I think, to behave quite badly as human beings, just because it must teach them the wrong lessons that you can exploit and abuse people who are in your care just because they are vulnerable and depend on you.
No, certainly. And I think and I hope that this policy proposed under Budget 2018, that is a massive step in the right direction, because now this is based on personal experience, right? You know, in recent years, a few years ago, I actually had to sort out a problem with an agent. And this was when I first came into the country, you know, and kind of seeing how much the reliance on foreign maids and these agents have just been grown out of proportion, has just grown out of proportion, right? So just to give you some context here, Angel
Fernandez.
She alluded to this earlier as well, right? Essentially, when a maid comes here, like they've got, say, an Indonesian maid, they've got a 2-year contract with a certain household. For the first 6 months of the pay, it goes to the agent, all right? And that's the agent here. You hear stories about how many of these maids, before even signing up in their home country, they then have to pay thousands of ringgit more to the agent over there. So they're just bleeding money left, right, and center, coming here with these prospects or with the hope of trying to find a better life, you know, trying to make some money and then send it back home. But these agents completely distort the entire equation.
Yeah, I mean, the other problem, of course, is just the kind of uneven development that we have globally, the fact there's inequality in some countries and lack of opportunities. And so, you know, because people are, as it were, desperate to get to other countries to find work they can't find at home, that they are willing to engage agents. They are willing to pay that money and, you know, in fact, in some ways, exploit themselves before they start making money. So do we have a rather difficult and structural problem on a global scale that isn't going to be easily solved?
Sure.
As soon as, you know, as long as there are poor people out there willing to get into a country that imports labor, you're going to have the prospect of, you know, a self-exploitation as well as exploitation in the way that we see human traffickers do.
And I would also contend that desperation is mirrored on the part of Malaysian households as well, because of the increasing demands for cheap foreign help. They are then desperate enough to engage these agents despite the crazy fees.
Okay, if you want to be part of this conversation, you can tweet us at BFM Radio, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. We'll be back with more news and analysis. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.